Let's sing this morning. There's love that came for us.
There is love that came for us, humble to a sinner's cross. He broke my shame and sinfulness. He rose again victorious.
Faithfulness I can't deny. he shall come.
When he shall come with trumpet sound. Oh, may I then in him be found, dressed in his righteousness alone.
Faultless,
faultless to stand before. Christ alone, cornerstone, the weak made strong, and the Savior's love, and through the storm, He is Lord, the Lord of all.
Step one more time, Christ alone, our cornerstone. Are you leaning on Him this morning?
Christ alone.
Borrowed W.A. Criswell's sermon title because it's such a cool title. I have to admit. My sermon, but his title. Sermon title is The Fifth Sparrow. The Fifth Sparrow. Luke chapter 12. I want to look at the beginning of the chapter there, and then we're going to skip down to the couple of verses I want to focus on, which are verses 6 and 7. But I want to set the scene, I guess, for what's taking place is in the meat of Jesus' public ministry, getting toward the back end of it, actually. And in the context of where we're at, Jesus had just left the home of a Pharisee. He had healed a dumb man previously, then made his way into a Pharisee's home, had some interesting interactions with him. The guy was upset because Jesus didn't wash his hands before he sat down to eat, and Jesus, you know, pretty much told him how it was. And then from there, he leaves the Pharisee's house, and it says in chapter 12 here, in the meantime, when there were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trode one upon another. So that's the scene. He is healing people. He's having lunch with a Pharisee. He's leaving that man's home, and people are thronging to him by the tens of thousands. Tens of thousands. The actual, you know, words that we have translated here sometimes are translated 10,000s. So tens of thousands of people, that's a lot. You think about going to a professional game, if you've ever been to one, like an Astros game when it's sold out. I mean, you're looking at, what, 30, 40,000 people. I don't know how many Minute Maid holds, but, you know, it's not uncommon for those stadiums when you get up into college football, for example, to have 70, 80, 90, or the Big House in Michigan, over 100,000 people. And when you see that many people in one place, that is a throng of people. And that's what we had here, was just a throng of people, masses of people, so much so that they were trampling over one another. Maybe even dangerous if it's, you know, up against a solid surface somewhere for this many people to be gathered together. But luckily, this was on, you know, the countryside, and people could spread out, and they were just everywhere, people everywhere. And so he begins to speak. If you notice there at the end of verse 1, he begins to speak to his disciples, warns them against the leaven of the Pharisees. That's a great sermon for another time. And then eventually, he changes his attention just a little bit in verse number 4, and he says, I say unto you, my friends. So there among the masses of people, some of them he identifies as friends. You know, we could say he's talking about the disciples still, or you could say maybe he's talking about the 70 or whoever. I feel like that he's speaking to those who are in the crowd, because he's speaking to the crowd, that are sympathetic to his gospel message, to what he's preaching, to what he's teaching. There were those among them that were not friends. But he was speaking to those who were willing to listen. And he tells them some things there, verse 4 and 5. Great verses of Scripture. But another sermon, another time. I want to focus on verse 6 and 7, what he said to those he identified as friends. He said, "Are not five sparrows sold for 2 farthings? And not one of them is forgotten before God. But even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows." Some of the simplest, I guess, of scriptures that teaches a truth that is so easy that a child could read it and understand it. That Jesus is showing us just how valuable that we are to Him. How valuable we are. But I want you to think a moment of what He didn't say. He did not say, "Consider the eagle." What a majestic bird the eagle is. People are seeing eagles in this area more and more now. I don't know if you have seen any bald eagles lately, but I have. I've seen two within the last probably year and a half. One of them was swooping down toward roadkill on the highway in front of me and then banked whenever he saw me. And I was like, good to keep my eyes on the road, because I was just like, wow, that was a bald eagle. And the other one at the house after we had had some crawfish, I threw out all the heads over the fence there, you know. And Dan come in and said, "I saw a bald eagle out there." I'm like, "What?" She said, "Over there where you threw all those crawfish." And I went out there, and of course it was gone. And so I'm just sitting there looking, and then all of a sudden I see the eagle take off, and 5 crows chasing him. You know, he could have dispatched them so easily, but he let them chase him off. So he did not say the eagle, the monarch of the air, the symbol of nations. Nor did he say the nightingale with her beautiful songs. I don't know that any bird is as beautiful of a singer as the nightingale is. Just a melody that's varied and impassioned. No, instead he says to consider the sparrow. And then in verse 24 he says, "Consider the raven." 2 outcasts among the birds. Two nemesis, two pests, 2 birds that are not popular at all. Sparrows are not native to our side of the world. They're an invasive species. And most people do not care for sparrows. They're aggressive little things. They eat the eggs of other birds, of songbirds. And they're just not real popular. They have their place, obviously. Jesus is here talking about them as being important to God. But they've never been popular anywhere that I know of. And the other one is crows, ravens here, or crows. The symbol of the omen of evil or of ill. Cold eyes and an obnoxious song. Just, you know, you want to throw something at them. They're just pest. And that's who he's referring to here when he says, "Consider the sparrows, consider the ravens." Isn't that interesting that he chose those birds? Instead of choosing the majestic, instead of choosing the beautiful, you know. But no, he chose sparrows and ravens. He's making a point, isn't he? Is that which is neglected, that which is unimportant, that which is forgotten and is discarded by man, is something that is valuable and precious to God. Now, all you have to do to finish this message really is to put your name in that blank. I can't express how valuable each soul is to God, how valuable that you are to God, that your life is, that your salvation is, that your eternity is, that the daily life that you live, how important it is to Him as well. But this is what Jesus draws our attention to. Charlie Brown, great comic strip, written by a good man. And he identified with the underdog. He is synonymous with the term underdog, Charlie Brown is. He always felt like one. In one scene, he was building a birdhouse when Lucy, always Lucy, she came by, questioned him as to what he was doing. And he says, "I'm building it for the sparrows." That's what he told her. for sparrows. Nobody builds birdhouses for sparrows. I do, replied Charlie Brown. I always stick up for the underbird. That's wisdom there, isn't it? Sticking up for the underbird. You know, there are a lot of people in this world that we live, they're the underbird. They're that person that nobody notices, nobody attends to, nobody sometimes cares for. When I was reading W.A. Criswell's sermon on this passage, I couldn't help but be attracted to one of the stories that he told. Told a couple. Both of them were just kind of heart-wrenching, but he was preaching a funeral one time, and nobody showed up for the funeral. Nobody. And so he told the funeral home director to wait just a second. And he went outside, and there was a hamburger stand across the road. And he went over to the guy that owned the hamburger stand and said, "Would you like to come to a funeral?" He said, "I'm preaching a funeral across the road, and there's not a living soul there, and I don't want to preach that man's funeral without somebody there." And the guy agreed. And so he preached a funeral to a hamburger stand owner of a person that nobody else came to. That's sad. He was a sparrow of a human being, obviously. The fifth sparrow, as he put it. Another story he told was just equally as sad, but he was in Baylor's where he went to college many years ago. W.A.'s in heaven now. He'd be well over 100 if he was alive. And he told how that one time he was around town and he was going by this one place, and there was a bunch of people just kind of standing outside of an old shanty-looking home. And he was curious. It just looked like a weird scene. And he went over and asked them what was going on. They said, "There's a, you know, elderly man, a black man, elderly black man that's in the house there, and we're waiting on him to die. He's about to die." He's like, "Well, okay. Why are you waiting on him to die? Why isn't somebody in there with him?" It moved his heart so much that he said, From that day forward, he would go to that part of town daily and knock on doors and ask for permission to come in and to read the gospel, because it just moved him that that man that was in there dying may not have ever even heard the gospel. When God looks out upon all of his creation, every last bit of it is important to him, even the sparrows and the crows. And especially, Jesus said, you, the human beings, the man and the woman that he saved for last, the best, to create, the only created in his own image. And so consider these sparrows this morning. These sparrows are sold five, it says, for a couple farthing, for two farthing. We've lost the meaning of the money in the Bible, because it's on the other side of the world. And you know, we Americans, we got our own stuff, right? We don't want pounds and drachmas and all that stuff that everybody else does. We want our inches and miles, and you know, we want to be different. So we have our dollar, they have their pounds. So this would mean more to people maybe that was brought up around it. So we have to just kind of lean on our research. What I know about a farthing is that two mites makes a farthing. And it would take 64 mites to make a drachma. A drachma was a man's wage for one day. If he went out and worked in the field, they'd give him a drachma. That's a day's wage. And so basically these five sparrows are 1/16th of a day's wage is what it would cost for five of them. Not very much, about 30 minutes of labor. Someone said that God is great in great things, but he is very great in little things. Even the little sparrows are important to him. And he's showing us just how important they are. As we look a little closer here, you can look at the verses up above. You can see that there's an idea of people that are afraid of certain things. And then in verse number 7, he says, "Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows." And I would ask you, you know, what do you fear? I know what I fear. There ain't no doubt about it. I don't even want to talk about it because I fear it, right? There are certain things that I don't do well around. There are certain things that I sincerely don't like. in the early 2000s, the researchers at John Hopkins University, a pretty storied university, medical facility, reported that 30 years ago, the greatest fear among grade school children were animals, being in a dark room, high places, strangers, and loud noises. That would have been 30 years before the early 2000s, so, you know, 50 years ago now. And then at the time that this research was done in 2005 or so, it had changed to these things. This is what kids ranked as what they were had the greatest fear of: divorce, nuclear war, cancer, pollution, and being mugged. Times had changed. Fears had changed. All those fears were legitimate, both long, long ago and today. Fear. What are you afraid? Jesus says, do not fear him that can kill your body and cannot touch your soul. Do not fear that. Fear not. God cares for the sparrows. He cares for you. There are so many phobias out there. It is absurd. It really is. I wrote down some that I thought were just preposterous, and there's so many. I just had to choose a few. Pelidophobia. That's how you say it. Most of them are hard to say. Fear of baldness and bald people. We don't have any of our bald people here today. One notably not here. I was hoping he'd be here for this sermon today. I got a couple of zingers in there for him. Fear of bald people. Then there's chaetiophobia, fear of hairy people. No Esau's for me. Right? Poor fibrophobia, fear of the color purple. Somebody's afraid of purple, y'all. Can you imagine that? And then the most unimaginative of all the fears is phobia, fear of being afraid. That's, I don't know, Eeyore syndrome or something. I want you to notice that we have nothing to fear, that we serve a good God. He loves the sparrows, even the fifth one, and he loves you. Let me show you a few things that I think that this passage tells us, very simple truths. I'm not being profound here. I'm just being remindful of what we need to know about God. Number one is that we are not forgotten. We are not forgotten. It'd be real easy to forget the sparrows. They're insignificant. We know in another place where it says that not a single sparrow even falls to the ground that our Father doesn't know it. We are not forgotten. Ephesians 1:4-5, it says, according as he has chosen us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him in love. He remembers us. He has made us. And he has chosen us. We are not forgotten. There are times when we look and we think that God is not aware, that God is not active. Why is this happening? I want you to know you are not forgotten. God is still God. God does things that we don't always approve of. God does things that we don't always understand. But you are not forgotten. He cares for the sparrow. He certainly cares for you. We were chosen long ago. We were made to love him, the scripture says, long ago. He is sovereign, and he's in dominion, and he cares about you. You're not forgotten. There's a man that loved old books, and he had an acquaintance who had just thrown away an old Bible. We have some old Bibles on that back bench, by the way, that needs a home. If you want one, you're welcome to take it. And he threw away this old Bible that had been stored in the attic of his ancestral home for generations. He said, I couldn't read it, the friend explained. Somebody named Guten something had printed it. Not Gutenberg, the book lover exclaimed in horror. He said, the Bible was one of the first books ever printed. Well, a copy just sold for over $2 million. His friend was unimpressed. He says, mine wouldn't have brought a dollar. Some fellow named Martin Luther had scribbled all over it in German. I hope that's a made-up story, not a true story, by the way. Forgotten piece of trash was actually a great treasure. Sometimes we feel like that piece of trash, but I want you to know you're a treasure in God's eyes. You're a treasure to Him. He desires to know you and to have an intimate relationship with you far beyond what you can even imagine. He wants to really be the central point of your entire life. You have truly been fearfully and wonderfully made. He's made you for a purpose, to love on you and for you to love on Him. Sparrows have worth. You have worth as well. That brings me to the second point. Not only are you not forgotten, but you are not insignificant. You're not insignificant. The sparrow here seems insignificant. I mean, they're selling them for half a penny. You know, they're not selling them for much money at all. They're basically, they want to get rid of them. And they sell them very, very cheap. That's what happens when you want to get rid of something. You mark it down, and then you invite me or my wife to the sale. We'll buy it. If she won't, I probably will. And then we'll look at each other like, why did we buy that? I don't know, but it was on sale. Good deal, wasn't it? These sparrows sometimes are put on sale as well. Psalms 145, 15 and 16, it says, the eyes of all wait upon thee, and thou givest them their meat in due season. Thou openest thine hand and satisfies the desire of every living thing. You ever thought about just how grand a design God has created in this world? Man, we are searching everywhere for more worlds like this world and hoping to find life outside of this place. But I tell you what, we got all the life that we could ever want to explore and imagine right here on this earth. And it's amazing what God has created. It's amazing. I read a story of a couple of friends that were way up in the Matterhorn Mountains of Italy, and they were just being inspired by all of the beauty of it. And there was a fly that was buzzing around, and it was a pest, you know. And one of the men there was knowledgeable of such things, and he says, you know, you see all this beauty of these mountains, and you're inspired by it. He said, but take this fly. One of them was dead, apparently. And he took a magnifying glass, and he showed them the vast number of hairs on his leg. He said, let me remind you that the flies that we have back home in England have no hairs on their legs. Isn't it wonderful that God created this fly, he told them, up here in these cool mountains to be fully clothed with hair? I tell you, one of the neatest little shows that I ever saw was on God's creation, where the narrator acted like one of the animals all the time, and he talked about how God created him to be this way or that way, and you know how he attracted his food and how he survived. It's amazing. Nature is amazing. And we are not insignificant. He provides for everything. And in this passage, isn't it great? He says here that even the hairs of our head are numbered. Haven't we often wondered about such a verse of Scripture? The hairs of our head are numbered. Do the math there. The average head of hair is 150,000. It don't take some of you near as long for God to count as it does others. But 150,000 is the average. Multiply that out by the 8 billion people on this earth and God being able to know every one of them and whenever a single hair falls. You say, why would God care about trivial things? He doesn't. He's just that knowledgeable. He knows. He knows everything. He is in control. His love is just as infinite for you as that knowledge is of the hairs on the heads of people. Now, I said five sparrows. The fifth sparrow is the name of this title. Let me show you why. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 29, it said that two sparrows are a farthing. Two sparrows are a farthing. Well, I can count on my fingers and see if one farthing gets me two sparrows, then two farthing only gets me four. But here in Luke, he said, oh no, there's a special going on. If you got two farthings, we'll throw in the fifth one for free. Doesn't that show just how insignificant these sparrows truly are? There's two for a farthing, but two farthings will get you five. They really want to get rid of them. That fifth sparrow is thrown in just to seal the deal. That worthless fifth sparrow. Way back in the day, they used to have a baker's dozen. They don't do that anymore. I want my 13th donut like they used to do. Right? They don't do that anymore. baker's dozen. Add one just in case one of them was messed up. Really what it was, they want you to feel like you got something free. I'm going back to that place because I got something free there. Right? The fifth sparrow was even more insignificant than the ones that were sold two for a farthing. But that's exactly the ones that God loves. Those that everyone else considers to be of no worth have great worth to our God. Every human life has worth to our God. There are people who are so incapable of anything that they literally have to be provided for everything that they do. They're fed by hand. They're cleaned by hand. They can't speak. They can't move. But that is a precious life in the eyes of God. And precious to those parents, to that person as well, and the loved ones. We are not insignificant. We are not. The Jews were so impressed with God's care for His creation that they taught their young ones that every blade of grass had a guardian angel. I don't believe as such, but that's a little far-fetched and extreme. But I tell you what, it's pretty extreme for God to know the number of hairs on everybody's head too, isn't it? Our God is very much concerned about you. You are not insignificant in the least bit. And next thing I want to say is that you are understood. You are understood. This fifth sparrow was meaningless, just in a cage. Going to be sold for a meal probably. And you not get much meal out of five sparrows, but you know, poor people had to eat what they could, I suppose. Thrown in for free. But I tell you, when we think about some people in this world, and sometimes maybe we feel this way about ourselves, that you know, nobody gets me. There's been a campaign here on TV lately that's caught my attention. I don't know which group is putting it out, and I don't necessarily always agree with every little thing on their little commercial, but it says that He gets us. That's what it's been saying on those commercials. And that truth is right. God gets us. He gets you. He knows who you are. He knows what you're about. He knows what makes you tick, and He knows what you need. He knows what will make you better. He knows what will make you whole, what will make you complete. And it's Him, by the way. He wants to be the integral part of your life, as I've already mentioned. And I want you to understand that He understands you. He understands what you're going through. He understands what you've been through. And He cares for you greatly. This past week, after I finished the sermon, Brother Ken said a few words to me. In very kind words. Ken MacArthur, I've known for many, many years. And he has just a way with words. Sometimes he can just say and see a situation that other people don't. My son Andrew is very similar kind of a person, where everybody else is watching the crowd. They single out that person that nobody else is paying attention to. And, you know, he said something that you know, it was heartfelt, and at the same time it was very meaningful. He said, "Don't ever let anybody tell you that you know you're not of value, but you know, because it would be real easy for someone to have been in the position that I came from, my family life, to be looked at as maybe less than someone else." And I have never felt that way, and I've never even thought about feeling that way. But then I thought about it when he said that, and thought how true that could be, because of how petty people are. People look on the outward, is what they do. They look at your pedigree. They look at where you come from and who you come from and the money that you have and, you know, the job or the business that you own or, you know, the car that you drive, the clothes that you wear, how you dress your kids, bigger the beau, the better the mama, you know, that kind of thing. That's the way that people think. They look on the outward. They look at societal norms and they look at things that they think that are important that are nothing more than drivel. I mean, absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of things. Heaven does not care about the exterior whatsoever. When Jesus was in that hypocrite's house, he called him a hypocrite later, and he didn't wash his hands. He said, y'all make the platter clean and beautiful on the outside, but inside is nothing but death and decay. We have to remember that all that this world has to offer, all that it has to offer is meaningless to God. You can't take anything of this world with you. There is nothing of value in this world as far as material things are concerned. But what you have, that everybody has, is a life worth living. You have a soul created in the likeness and in the image of God that is precious to Him and that God desires to be involved with. He'll take whatever stuff that's going on and He'll make something beautiful out of your life if you allow Him to do so. The sparrows, two for a farthing, or five for two. The fifth sparrow, the forgotten sparrow, he wasn't even part of the original equation. He was just thrown in for free. That's how some people are. That's how some people feel. But Jesus says nobody ought to feel that way. The God who made them, the God who clothes the lily, the God who feeds the sparrows, the God who does all of these things, greatly loves you and wants to know you and wants to be an important part of your life. I hope and pray that you will consider the sparrow and the raven and see how that sometimes in our own hearts and minds that's who we see ourselves as. We see ourselves as not important, but you're very valuable and important to God. Would you give your life to Him and allow Him to use you in a wonderful way? If you've not done that, we want to give you an invitation to come and do that. If you're here today and you're a Christian, I want to remind you of your value. I want to remind you of your importance because you're the ones who make a difference in the lives of so many people. Continue to do those good things. Continue to spread the good news and to share God's love and make a difference to those people who feel like that they're not significant because all life is significant. Let's stand together as we sing a verse of invitation.